This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit immtt.com for more information. Hey everybody, Lon Seiben here. We are back for episode 38 of Behind the Video. I have not left my house in about two days. I did get dressed this morning, which is something I haven't done in a couple days. So the reason is that we got hit with a lot of snow, something you Californians on the call may not have experienced as I did. And joining us, as always, is Tim Street. Hey, Tim, from Los Angeles.
What's snow, Lon? I've never heard of that before.
You know, it's heavy, it's white, it falls from the sky, and it cripples your economy. So it's a great experience. I highly recommend it.
And we have somebody heavy breathing on the line. Who's that, Lon?
That heavy breather is Dane Golden, who's a heavy hitter in online video, the online video world. Hey, Dane, how are you?
Hello. Yeah, I will mute when I'm not on, so there's no heavy breathing. I'm not getting feedback here, but thanks for having me on, guys.
It's good to be here, and good to have you here. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to? Because you have quite a history in our experience in online video. We worked at the Twit Network while it was launching from zero to hundreds of thousands of viewers, and now you're off on your own doing marketing for people in the video world. So why don't you talk about what you do?
Oh, well, real briefly, hey.com is me. Just Google Hey, you'll find out what I do. And I've been focusing on audience development largely for YouTube channels and web TV in general. Just the combination of marketing and social engagement, social video.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about that later on because Tim, before the show, mentioned he was hungover from watching. I would imagine, Tim, you binged on the entire season of House of Cards.
No comment.
So whatever Netflix is doing, it's successful. We're going to talk to you about that a little bit today to get your thoughts on how to best market your web series, whether to dump it all out at once or go episodic. And before we do that, though, we're going to go and run through the weekly top tens or fives and of all the video happening, both on the air and online. So let's take a quick look at breaking news in the broadcast realm. I did 10 this week because there was a sporting event that took up quite a bit of real estate on our list.
Was that the badminton championships?
Actually, it was the curling opening season.
Oh, yeah, because all the snow.
Exactly.
I heard there was a show, but I turned on and the lights were off. I don't know what happened.
You know, and what's odd about that, here's what's funny. We go to TV by the numbers. It's at zaptoit.com to get our list every week. And Our producer Jason goes and gets that, I should say. That's correct. So we just look at it, Jason Perrier, and we just look at what he pastes into our document here. So he does a lot of the work in reformatting it. But what's interesting this week is that Nielsen measured the blackout delay. And would you know that 106 million people were watching during the blackout?
Of the Super Bowl.
Of the Super Bowl.
That's right. Not just the blackout of like New York from the storm.
Right. that happened later. But it was tremendous. I guess mainly because people were just waiting for the games to start back up again.
I think that this was the best thing that happened in the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because what were people doing? They were tweeting about it. They were not actually watching it. They had more time to tweet. They had more time to post on Facebook and Google+. Other people were seeing it, tuning in. People were coming in from the other room who were fixing snacks, and it got more attention to the show, more social.
Well, like what, 108 million?
About 106, give or take.
106 million? Okay.
During the delay, yeah.
During the delay. And then the overall Super Bowl was like 108?
108, that's correct. So it was considerable. Now, Oreo
As opposed to 2.5 men?
Yeah, right. Which was at 13. You know, and I think any week they would kill for that at 13 million viewers. One of the things that was interesting was how Oreo jumped on this and had a little social media image
work its way out to the Twitter sphere and Facebook sphere, I'd imagine, as well, with a cookie and a glass of milk, and it said you can still dunk in the dark. So
that's newsjacking.
That is newsjacking.
David Meerman Scott, check out all of his information on newsjacking.
I'm going to look that up, newsjacking. So we'll talk
David
about that.
David Meerman Scott, he's definitely a buddy. We should get him on the podcast sometime. I'll probably see him at South by Southwest.
Well, good. Let's get him on. So now there's some other TV shows that actually had some viewership. So number 10 was 2.5 Men at 13 million, which I think anyone would kill for. So number 10 is certainly not a bad place to be, especially given all the turmoil that show's been having. So
it's amazing what 10 years will do. 13 million to get you canceled 10 years ago.
It's true. The disambiguation has really been happening here. American Idol, 13 million there as well. And I've been hooked on it for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe
that used to be the number one show.
It used to be. And it's far down on the list. Although the Wednesday broadcast on January 30th had 15 million. So it was just above Person of Interest, which came in at 15.7. NCIS Los Angeles is number 6 with 17.2 million. Big Bang Theory holding on at the 17.7 million viewer number. And NCIS still dominating at 22 million. That show just keeps on going and going. And what was interesting, despite all of the hoopla, perhaps, of the Super Bowl, in fact, I think CBS's head executive sent out an email saying that this blackout is going to have the game become the most watched ever because it kind of delayed things enough that the West Coast might tune in more. The reality was that it was down from last year's Super Bowl. So it was 108 million this year overall compared to 111 million a year ago. But you also had two huge cities, New York and, well, I guess Boston to some degree, but New England Patriots really encompassed my area as well. So you had the entire population dense Eastern Seaboard tuning in for that versus something that was a little bit more scattered, I think, this year on two different coasts. So I think, you know, they made their money, right? So it keeps going.
I think, you know, as great of a team as the Baltimore Ravens are, they don't have the fan base that the New York Giants and the Patriots have. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
I think so, too. And to some degree, here in New England especially, I live on the demarcation line between becoming whether or not you're a Yankees fan or a Boston fan. So where I live, you can be both, right? But the Giants and the Patriots, huge. And there's like this intense rivalry that's been going on for as long as I've been around. So
now, does that same rivalry exist in WWE entertainment?
Well, it does, only in the sense that WWE is headquartered here in Stamford, Connecticut, and they're laughing all the way to the bank this week, and I don't care. I don't think they care much about any kind of competition because they have dominated three of the top five positions on the cable rankings this week. So number 5, number 4, and they got about 4.8 and 4.9 million viewers on those two broadcasts. Those are the Monday night broadcasts. I think one was looks like they went on for 2 hours on Monday. And the numbers here are a little confusing. So whatever it was, they were on Monday from like 8 to 10. So they had everything wrapped up on the cable rankings there. And Pawn Stars came in at number 2 and 3 on the list this week also.
Do you think that's reflective of our society, that wrestling and pawning stuff are the number one shows on cable television? Does that tell us anything about America?
What do you think, Dane?
I just wanted to say my...
Oh, there goes Dane. We lost Dane.
The wrestlers got to him.
Yes, the wrestlers got to him, so I'm sure he'll be back here in a minute. He is back. Let's see if we can get Dane's thought on... Let me unmute him real quick here, and we'll get him back.
Got kicked off just at the wrong time. Sorry.
That's all right. So we think the wrestlers got to you.
I think that, yeah, I was going to say, let's get ready to... I'm sorry, this has been trademarked. I can't say that. I think it's just it just shows a lot of the crap that's on TV, and that's why people are turning to a lot of web TV and their own Netflix and their own smaller audience shows. So that's basically it with me. That's all I have to say about that.
I think spoken like a true promoter of web video.
Yeah.
I do think there's some truth to it, though. It looks like people are kind of tuning out some of this junk, and this is like the cream of the crap that might be left. And Pawn Stars isn't bad, and you know, WWE is certainly entertaining to some. So
the cream of the crap. I love that. Has anyone trademarked that yet? That's
we should
great.
Do that. We should cream that copyright right there.
Cream that copyright. Yeah. Hey.
So have you guys heard of Aereo?
No, what is it?
So Aereo is this new thing, and it's only available in New York City at the moment. But they found a way to kind of skirt around some rebroadcasting laws. And what they do is they set up an array of these tiny little antennas, and they allow you to pay them to buy one of those or rent one of those antennas, and then you can stream what's coming in over the air anywhere in the world over the internet. So
that's what they do part of their time. The rest of their time is spent defending lawsuits against
yes,
them.
Right. And I think they've been kind of emboldened by, I guess they had a successful end, or at least a continuance to a suit that was ongoing between some broadcasters and the company who was trying to stop them from doing this. And they have apparently found a real loophole here, which says that you can, you know, rebroadcast someone's personal antenna, which is what this turns out to be. And what Aereo is doing now is really working to expand very quickly, probably in order to make it harder for a court to shut them down or feel okay about shutting them down. And they hired, according to Broadcasting and Cable, Alex Mobetro, who's the former head of global marketing and PR for Rockstar Games, the Grand Theft Auto series, Red Dead Redemption, all those games the kids like to play.
So if he can defend all the violent video games, obviously he can defend any type of lawsuit against or public opinion against stealing content.
It could be. And really, this is a guy who knows how to market to young adults, and I would guess primarily young men, which could be where they're aiming their targets at, who are largely younger folks who are certainly consuming more web video, and if they can get a piece of their viewership or dollars for broadcasts, who most of these people have already cut the cord, so they're you know, certainly in line for that. And I don't know if they actually have to pay the broadcasters for the rebroadcast rights like the cable companies do. So this is it's going to be interesting.
Is this a service I can get now? Is this available now?
If you live in New York, but apparently they're going to be expanding into greater metropolitan areas. And I think, Dan, you're in the San Francisco area still. Is that correct?
I am, but a lot in L.A. like today.
Got it. And I think they're going to be doing some stuff out in Los Angeles next. So
there could be a silver linings playbook in all of this? Somehow.
There could. And we could look at the box office and see where that ended up on the list. So box office has been just boring lately. The money has not been flowing too heavily there. So
well, usually January is where you dump all your stinkers, usually.
So the ones that aren't stinkers tend to hang around a little bit longer, Tim? Is that...
Yeah.
So if we look at the box office here, Zero Dark Thirty, which has been out for a while, is number five with $5 million coming in with ticket sales. Mama at $6.59 million. I don't think I've caught Mama yet. I think we talked about it last week. Silver Linings Playbook with Jennifer Lawrence at $7.74 million. She's a trip. She's fun to watch in interviews. I don't know if you've seen...
Yeah, it's a fun movie, too, if you're into uncomfortable, depressing humor.
It seems to be a lot of uncomfortable.
I thought it was an excellent film. I thought it was excellent.
It's a great film. It's just I see this new trend of depressing humor. The way that like The Office is uncomfortable humor, Silver Linings is depressing humor, which is kind of cerebral. So be careful.
So watch. Yeah, watch with caution.
Yeah, you might hurt your brain.
So the number two is Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters at $9.42 million.
I've been meaning not to see that one.
So we won't talk about it. And that is it's kind of like the continuance of like Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter or something, right? Number one is Warm Bodies, which is I guess it's like a spoof of a zombie thing. Is that?
It's from the zombie's perspective, and I haven't seen the movie yet, but I read the book, and it is a fantastic book. It's a love story from a zombie's perspective. So he falls in love with it's a young zombie, and he falls in love with a young zombie hunter.
Oh.
And what it really is it's a play off on Romeo and Juliet. Is it the Capulets and the Montagues?
That's correct.
Their families don't like each other. Her family kills zombies.
Gotcha.
His family eats humans.
No. So it's a mutual just kind of a washout here, right?
Hopefully they are accurate in their depiction and they got everything correct.
We'll see how they turn.
That's right. Yeah, more accurate than Lincoln.
Yes, excellent segue.
Segue king.
That is, you know, that's why you've worked in this business for so long. You know how to make those things happen. So here's something that's popped up interesting, and I have a connection to this because I actually worked with this guy for a while. So there was a scene in the movie Lincoln where they're voting on the amendment to abolish slavery, and in the course of that, they depict Connecticut's representatives, some of them voting against the amendment, which is not the case. In fact, Connecticut voted in favor of the amendment unanimously, and one of the members actually voted against his party at the time to do so. Another left his ailing wife in Connecticut and took the, you know, it wasn't easy to get to D.C. from Connecticut back then. You didn't have trains and planes and everything else. Who left his dying wife to come and cast that vote. It was that important to him. And Congressman Joe Courtney, who I was, in full disclosure, campaign manager for in 2006 and
really?
2008. Yep. Raised an issue over it because he was at the movie and he was so busy he didn't get to see it until just about a week or two ago. And, you know, was really taken aback by this. And he's always been a student of history. He's a very policy-minded person who has a really in-depth knowledge of the background of our country. And it just really hit him like, wow, that can't be. So he went and looked it up when he got home. And sure enough, all of Connecticut's representatives in Congress had voted in favor of the amendment. So he wrote a letter to Steven Spielberg asking, and he did it as an open letter because, you know, half the time these things get lost. So he wrote the letter, and it's really turned into quite an embroiling story because when Joe was running in 2006, Ben Affleck, who has a movie in Oscar contention, had come in to help campaign for us at the University of Connecticut, and we won that race by only 83 votes, and the UConn effort really helped solidify that. And there was a lot of speculation in some of the trade rags that somehow this is some conspiracy theory when, you know, really the only time Joe had seen Ben and his Affleck in his life was then. They ran into each other once a few months ago, but I don't even know if he remembered him. So it was just funny to see just how nasty Oscar politics can get. And the response from the writer of Lincoln was really kind of a little thin-skinned, in my opinion.
Snide, yeah.
Yeah, it was just, and it's funny because people make such a big deal about, Hollywood getting involved with politics, and when politics gets involved with Hollywood, suddenly, oh no, you can't go there. So,
well, it's art. You don't want people messing with your art. I mean, it's like that little kid that does the trick shots. I don't know if you've seen that video.
I did see that video. It was hysterical. I want to leave one thing on the table with this thing before we move on. But Chris Dodd, who heads the MPAA, lives in Connecticut, or had at least until he left the Senate. And he lives in Joe Courtney's district. So maybe we can have like one of those beer summits in Haddam, East Haddam, Connecticut later this summer. And I would love to be there for that one.
Do you have to drink Sam Adams?
I think that
he was, Courtney was totally fair. I mean, if your state was essentially misrepresented, I mean, movies are movies and you can't take them all at face value, but with something like your representative voting to perpetuate slavery, that's a bit of a slight.
Yeah,
great screenplay, great film, my favorite film of the year. However, if you can't let that slide, I'm sorry.
I think that's been the reaction that we've seen out there.
This is going to cost him the Oscar for
screenplay?
Okay.
No, it either wins or it doesn't win, and no one really cares about that little particular thing in the film. But I think it's fair to state the record.
You think it'll come up in the Oscar show itself? Do you think there'll be a joke about it?
Who's the host?
Who is the host?
Do we know? It's not Eddie Murphy. It's not Billy Crystal. It's not. Is it Jimmy Kimmel this year?
It might be Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, he'll throw in that.
We should
have to
open it.
Yep.
They have to open with that. So.
Uh-oh, there's an OS X update available.
Uh-oh, don't update.
Don't update now.
Don't update now. So we should move on to the YouTube update of the week, and then we'll get into our discussion of...
Number five.
By the way, it was probably the best video I've watched all week. Unbelievable
really?
Little kid does a trick shot video, and 4.7 million people have watched this. I guess it got featured on Good Morning America, too, so it's getting out there.
I'm very suspect of this, but I can't figure out who sponsored it. Like, I'm just so cynical about these things. It just looks too good to be organic.
And what this is a kid, he's got to be like 2 years old, less than 2 years old, who's making baskets, in a little kid basketball hoop initially, and then he's at the arcade doing one of those games that gives you tickets and stuff, and the kids are just incredible. And the only thing I could think of, first of all, I was looking to see those, they do those shots where you pass the ball off frame, and then you have another frame.
There's
where
a couple
in.
Where it could have been done that way.
Yeah, I think that the kid missed most of them, and they only cut up the, they only put in the ones where he made
it. Yeah, they did 100 takes, and out of 100, he makes one.
Exactly. So that 1%, across the board, and only
know.
Show the good ones.
Know.
But something's up there. But
I'm skeptical about it.
Needless to say, they're cashing in on their revenue share this month with that. So did you see that one, Dane?
Oh, there you go. Christopher Wells Graham just texted me and said that Seth MacFarlane is the host of the Oscars.
There you go.
That's what I like about interacting with you. You don't have to Google. You just ask.
Ask the question, and they go off and do the work for you, so it works out pretty well.
It looks – I mean, this kid looks great making the shots. My nephew, he was riding a scooter at 2 years old, but that's not basket shooting.
That isn't basket shooting. Now, what's going to have to happen to this kid is that he's going to have to go the Tiger Woods route where his whole life now is going to be about basketball 24/7.
And hookers, right?
I hope not, but, if that's...
Okay, sorry,
that's...
I found the wrong tangent.
number four is Pink's video on Vivo, Just Give Me a Reason, featuring Nate Ruiz or whatever. I don't know. I'm so uncultured, I have no idea what the heck that's about. Official Ram Trucks Super Bowl commercial on the Farmers, $9.3 million.
That's the Paul Harvey one.
That's a good commercial.
Yeah,
so...
it's very emotionally engaging, isn't
it?
It was awesome. It is. And it's being rewarded with a lot of views on YouTube, and it makes you feel good about America, doesn't it? Our hardworking
Well, what's the what was the one from last year with the
Clint Eastwood and the empty chair? It was a car with no driver. It was an empty driver. No way,
right.
I'm using it with something else.
I can't tell him that.
Was that imported from Detroit last year? Right, that was the.
Yeah, well, nobody was flipping the bird in it.
Yeah, that's true. And that is number two. This was funny. This young lady who apparently was on some prescription medication that she shouldn't have had.
She is so much fun to watch. You're just like, wow, she's so sweet and nice. How could this judge ever do anything bad to her?
Then she turns around and tells him to F off and gives him the finger. And so he throws the book at her. And then there's been an update to that video. So if you go and watch the video, and you'll see this little split screen. I guess she's at the jail, and they're doing one of those closed circuit television arraignments. And he initially grants her a $5,000 bail and ups it to $10,000. I guess as she was walking away, she said adios and was kind of flippant about it. And then he came back, hit her with $10,000, and then she tells him to go F off, and then he locks her in jail for 30 days. Although it looks like he took some pity on her, and after she came off of whatever she was on, apparently she was on some Xanax, and he told her to get some help and let her go early. So a happy ending, and hopefully she will get her rehab in order and become the next YouTube star. So all in all, it worked
out.
Hopefully
that will happen fast.
Yes,
and Furious.
Yep, because that is number one. I didn't even realize there was five other Fast and Furious movies, but apparently they're up to number six, and there's an extended first look on the Fast and the Furious, and that's, at least as of last night, was almost 12 million views. Dane, do you watch these films?
No, I helped produce a show about cars, but a web show, but no, I haven't seen any of the Fast and Furious. I saw Drive.
Similar.
That's about it.
All the same stuff, you fix up some cars and make them go fast, and people like the movie, so there you go. They're making it's funny, you can make a lot of money just off the preview of the movie. 11 million
views. That's actually a great idea. Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of ads. I tend to actually go to Yahoo Movies still, That's one, the only thing I seem to go to Yahoo for. And they always have an ad before the trailer.
Right.
And why wouldn't you?
It's an ad for an ad.
Yeah, it
there
is.
There you go.
And people are consuming these ads voluntarily, which is even better. So it's quite interesting. So now we have a Twitter or a Netflix binger on the call, Tim.
Really?
Yes. And apparently they have launched an ad campaign, which I think is brilliant because it speaks to how Netflix likes to distribute its content, which is just all at once. And we'll get into this discussion in a minute right after our app of the week, but I wanted to talk about this ad first. And they have this ad about this woman who's ruining shows for everybody because you can watch all of them at once on Netflix. And Netflix, according to WebPro News, is reminding people to be considerate of what your friends have seen before you start talking about a show. So, Tim, do not spoil House of Cards for me, as I haven't yet watched it. but Dane, you saw this ad. What do you think?
Hashtag go Zoe.
I was talking to Tim last week about this, and this whole Netflix distribution thing is really pissing me off. It is so stupid from so many different angles. They Netflix people are so smart, but I just think it's wrong how they're distributing these things all at once, and I'll tell you why. The reason is because you can't build any community around it. You can't talk about it, which means there's no community. Talking is community. Discussion is community. You can't advertise. I've seen billboards here around LA, and I've seen ads on Netflix and a few other places, but discussion is community, and when you don't have anticipation from week to week, you don't have that community. So I think people say they want to watch something all at once, but in fact they don't. So it's bad all around. It's upsetting me.
And you know, what's intriguing about this is that they're advertising this, right? So they're almost encouraging, you know, they're encouraging people not to talk about shows that air on their network. And I think that's kind of a good point.
What's the point then?
Yeah, right. Well, that's it. Well, they've never had, you know, Netflix has never had the social capabilities either built into their platform, right?
But they do. They have Twitter. They have Facebook. There's places that people can discuss it. There's, we can talk about it on podcasts.
I tweeted this morning at 6:40 a.m. that I couldn't believe it was 6:40 a.m. already. I had started watching House of Cards 8 hours ago.
Did you really? You did not.
Yeah, and I had a lot of people tweet back. So there is discussion. We're just not going into details.
So you have to really censor your own speech in a sense, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how many...
As a consumer, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it uninterrupted. I don't want to wait a week for the next episode. I don't want to wait for the next season. So maybe after everybody else gets through the season, then we'll have some discussion about where the next season goes.
So I can't even discuss. I mean, I've watched, say, 5 episodes, I think. Somewhere between 4 and 6. But I don't really know where I left off and where you left off. So I can't. If you said,
sure.
I watched through episode 2.
I got no problem with it. I have no urge to discuss it with you yet.
this is against all methods of social. It's anti-social.
Times they are changing.
They are changing. And what does this do, Tim, for the production side? Because when you're doing, and we'll talk about the impact for independent producers in a minute, but when you're producing a television show that has a weekly thing, a lot of times you start producing it or you start airing it as you're still producing later episodes
always.
In the series.
Just so, about always, yeah.
So what does it do? You know, they did, what, 13 episodes of
Yeah, well, they had like a $100 million budget to do this, which is unheard of. And they brought in some people to do this show, you know, people like David Fincher, Joel Schumacher, Kevin Spacey's one of the producers, Dana Barretti. It's crazy the amount of talent that they have. Robin Wright's in it. It is just an unbelievably well-produced show. It's kind of like The West Wing meets The Sopranos. Everybody's bad, and you just love them. You love hating them. You love, you know. But I think this is an experiment. You know, we'll see what happens. We'll see if it works out for them.
I think
all buzzers are going off.
Yeah,
here.
My stuff
I
is going off.
I better stop talking.
I have to think, Tim, that if you're going to release it all at once, essentially a 13-hour movie, 13 one-hour episodes, you have to promote it like a movie. You have to promote it as if no one's ever heard of it. You have to promote it like a blockbuster, because you're not going to make your money back, your $100 million back, unless tons and tons of people see it all at once.
And how does Netflix make its money off of this? Is it just getting more subscribers
Think about this. This is money that they spent on content that they own. They have subscribers. And so if they get more subscribers out of this at, you know, $8, $9, whatever it is a month, they'll make that money back. And it's content that they're not licensing for somebody else, whereas, you know, it's kind of like rent or buy. They bought this one as opposed to renting it, and so they will continue to make money off this for years to come when people are watching it instead of another studio's product.
Well, that is a fascinating insight into how this might work. So overall, like perhaps...
What will really be interesting to me is...
So is it the upfront is more expensive than the...
Will this show wind up on HBO? Will it wind up on Showtime? Mm. That to
me is
really interesting. Will this have a new distribution model where Netflix becomes the first screen and then it goes to pay television?
That would be fascinating. Now, does Netflix own this, or is there some co-ownership with the studio?
Netflix
owned everything.
Really? Wow.
It's great.
So this is where it all starts. And the question is for HBO is whether or not they can continue only distributing their content through cable companies. Because I've wanted to buy that HBO Go subscription for a while. I can't do that.
Well, I've heard that HBO Go is available in, I want to say, Norway without a cable provider.
Okay.
But it's going to depend on what happens in the industry.
Fascinating stuff. Well, we're gonna
just
talk
use and... Arrow. Just use Arrow to get your HBO.
Well, it's not a broadcast channel. It's a little bit different.
They'll figure out a way to make it work. They'll become a cable company themselves. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna come back to this topic in a minute to talk about how independent publishers should look at this. And I think we might have two divergent opinions from Tim and Dane on this. So we'll come back to this. But first, though, our app of the week. Have you guys played with Vine yet from Twitter?
Yeah, I've played with it. I'm not convinced of it yet.
How about you, Dane?
I haven't been playing with it.
So I've been
watched it. It's an animated GIF.
Yeah, it is. It's an animated GIF maker essentially. Although it's some kind of video format. I'm not sure, but it kind of reminds. It's very Instagrammy in how it approaches itself. And there's been some really creative ways that people have been using it, especially a lot of stop motion. I've experimented with some. Stop motion of an orange being eaten and stuff. It's kind of cool. I don't know if
I think it's very cool.
I don't know if it's monetizable.
I don't think it's revolutionary, but I think it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it's got some features to it that are pretty cool.
I think whenever you constrain creativity, you get creativity that you wouldn't have thought of before. And I think the same thing's going to happen here. I think what we'll see, we're going to see, like, imagine... movie posters that are animated, motion movie posters. I think we'll see some of that emerge here. So it'll be animated key art, so to speak. And I think there'll be some fun stuff that gets shared and passed around, and there'll be things that we'd never really thought of before that will emerge from this. I personally just haven't had the bandwidth to really... You know, there's a few ideas that I have for it and some interesting ways that I think I could create some viral content for it, but I'm not passionate about it. So I think there'll be some people that are passionate about it and can build a great audience off of it.
I think if you can for just videos of friends and family just doing fun stuff either out or you're visiting people. You know, we're having a great time at the party or here at the club or whatever. And that's all you need to say. It doesn't need to be a long discussion of things. Just a real quick clip. I think that's
Miss
really
you.
Where the sweet spot is.
Yeah, right. Well, thanks, Tim. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, what I like about it, too, is just the ease of it. And you know, once you start playing with it, you can kind of see the potential for creating some more creative uses for it. And I think Tim's right that that constraint that that it puts on creativity results in even more creative uses of it. I think we're going to see more of that. You have to be careful, though, because as you're recording, it records both the video and the audio. So if you're if people around you are having a conversation and your ringer is set to vibrate as it always is on my phone, you won't hear the video, but anyone watching probably will. So just bear that in mind if you don't want your secrets divulged to the world as you're recording your Vine videos. So, all right, so let's go to our topic of the week here. And the debate topic I think we might have is for independent creators, and I would use this this Battlestar Galactica thing as probably an example of this, where they released a Battlestar Galactica reboot on YouTube exclusively through Machinima, two episodes a week of about 3 or 4 minutes in length, and then it played out over the course of a month or month and a half. And you know, what I noticed about it was the first episode got watched a lot, but people kind of forgot it was there as they went along. And Tim, you say dump it all at once, at least for some shows, maybe not all. Dane probably has a different opinion. So what's right? Do we, people that have a web series, I mean, certainly our show is episodic because it's news and we're looking at each week, but if I have an episodic web series, do I dump it all at once like Netflix is doing, or should I try to build an audience up over time? So who wants
I'm really curious what Dane has to say about this, and my question to Dane is there ever a good time to put it all out at once?
Yeah, well, I think that Netflix's previous methodology of a show that's been out, say Mad Men, for instance, it's the season is complete. You move it from a broadcast format to a streaming format and post all those. I think that that's legit. People have had time to have their community build up. Now it's done. Now you can post them all at once. I think that's legit. That's the right way to do it.
And what are we missing by not just putting it all out there at once?
I think web video is social video, and it's not just a series of files. And people, just for instance, I'll just use food for instance because I've been on a diet lately. People may say I want to eat that whole cake, but they really don't.
I do.
They want to eat it piece by piece. They want to eat it piece because it's the I would say that it's the anticipation of that next piece that's really what they want, not the ability to consume everything all at once.
So snack versus meals.
No, versus gluttony.
Okay, but what if like House of Cards? I mean, obviously, I mean you could do a marathon and watch 13 hours straight. Yeah. I'm sure there are people out there that have done it. I've taken a few breaks in between. but for me, it's like eating till you're full and then stopping. Eating till you're ready to stop.
There may be some math in there.
You know, I think losing. It depends on the series as well. I think there are some series that are snack food. I think there are other series that are meals. And I think there's going to be very shortly a new type of series that involves interactivity. And this interactivity will require you to drop all the episodes at once so that you can click through and experience all those different things that make up the story. Now, that's not going to be a traditional one-hour series. Nor is it going to be something that we've ever experienced before. But I think those new things are coming, and they'll be a cross between a snack and a meal. I don't know. What do you call that?
A brunch.
Brunch is gluttony.
Yeah, it's true. But let me ask you this. So let's take a few examples of web series that are successful. So our friend Bernie Sue has the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Great.
Not dropped at once.
Right, not dropped at once. He does what, one a week, one every couple of days?
Yeah, one, but there's different components. There's almost a piece of content or more per day.
So he is putting a lot out there, but not obviously dumping the entire day's shoot.
Yeah, I mean, Lizzie Bennet Diaries is a whole new ball game. I mean, it's you know, it's a tweet, it's a photo, it's a Facebook post, it's a Tumblr post, it's a whole episode, it's a spin-off series, it's transmedia, and you know, it's a new way of telling story that I think we'll see more of.
And Dane, let's take a look at maybe the Battlestar Galactica show. If you were in charge of that, how would you have distributed that? Would you have gone the episodic route like they did to a week for a month and a half, or would you have just dumped it all?
The most popular YouTubers do once or twice a week, and that's the same speed as the Battlestar Galactica, and I think that's legit. I think that's the right way to go. I would space it out half week or one a week is fine too. But
well, what about a book? Should you only put a book out one chapter at a time?
Well, I mean, that has happened, right? A lot of the, you know, like
you,
early...
You can't have social with a book if you haven't read the whole book, can you? Or can you do that on Goodreads?
I don't know on Goodreads, but I do know that the episodic, like Dashiell Hammett and those guys, a lot of their novels came out in cheap comic books and things like that over a series of weeks and months. But I don't know how much discussion and how people discuss things back there. But I think that's a cool way of doing things, but it doesn't have to be that. I think books are an interesting way of looking at it because we don't really have a lot of social around books. Yeah, you have Goodreads and people comment about it, but I don't know. I
look at House of Cards like a book. You can read a chapter at a time, or you can, you know, read as much of it as you want.
Well, what's the social though? If I haven't seen it, what's going to make me see it? Let me ask you that question.
Their marketing budget, and then other people are going to be talking about it, and it's the stuff of, you know.
What are they talking about though? Well, what are they talking about? What can you say about it? You can say it's a political thriller.
Yeah, I can say it's a political thriller. I can talk about what they do, and I can ask somebody, do you want me to tell you more?
Right. So really what I'm hearing from you is just like a movie. You don't know...
Just like a book.
Okay.
So there's some time over, you know, and maybe it depends on the show. So something like the Lizzie Bennet Diaries.
Think dumping the whole thing at once is necessarily a good idea for an independent web series that doesn't have a marketing budget and doesn't have a platform that it can feature it on and offer it to all its subscribers on. Those are two really powerful tools in building an audience. Netflix can offer it up and make it available to everybody, both page one of their platform and two billboards all over the country. So that's my feeling on it, is there are some things where it makes sense to dump it at once, and there's other things where it's crazy, it's suicide, it's never going to catch on.
And I'd like to be proven wrong. I'd like something to happen that I don't expect, and I'm going to wait, and I hope that you are right, Tim. I think this is a very interesting experiment, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens and if they release numbers on this.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll play out, and I think what'll be implicitly obvious is whether or not they do another one and spend another $100 million, right?
There you go.
So, well, that is interesting. Well, I guess there's no easy answer to this question, although it seems like if you're starting out looking to just get a foothold, Tim, just dumping it isn't probably the best way to go unless you've got some big network behind you, right?
Yeah, or if there's something really special and compelling about that first video that you know everybody, and the danger there is everybody who makes something thinks that, oh my God, everybody's going to want to watch this. But you have to be realistic about it. But if you know that you have your first video that is just going to immediately make everybody want to watch the next one, you know, if you're sitting on video viral gold, and there's really no way to tell that for sure, but if you have a really good idea and you know that first video is going to get watched a lot, then maybe it might make sense to put the whole thing out, because getting them back there might be a time reason about it. It could be something time sensitive that if the whole story is not out before Valentine's Day or before Halloween, then it makes absolutely no sense. So it just, to me, it depends. Every case is different.
Well, I think that is where we will end our discussion here. It looks like there's plenty of good options out there to figure out how you want to present your content when you are ready to do it. And this show for sure will be a weekly one for this foreseeable future, just because we haven't yet figured out how to predict the future. So we can't talk about the week that was until we know what happened. So that is the path we will take. Dane Golden, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Hey.com or just Google Hey, I come up first.
That's a great domain, by the way. So
yes.
you got that early, I think, didn't you?
Long time ago.
So hold on to that. That's some prime internet real estate right there. So hey.com, hey.com. And Tim, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, one Tim Street.
Excellent. You can find me on Twitter as well, LONSEIDMAN. And that will do it for this week on Behind the Video. We'll be back next week on our episodic journey. And you can find us at behindthevideo.com, on iTunes, and on Stitcher as well. And we do post on YouTube as, in addition to that. So you can subscribe to us everywhere, consume us any way you want. Just be sure to do that. And that'll do it for this week. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.